Have you ever had a moment in your life where you said, this changes everything? Maybe it was a meal you ate. Maybe it was somebody that you met. Or maybe for you, you can relate to what she was saying. Maybe for you, it was that moment where you realized that God's love was for you. Or that following Jesus was really an option for you. Or maybe it was the best thing for you. For me to be able to talk about this, I got to tell you a quick story about something that happened just about a month ago. I grew up in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and my family worships at the altar of Alabama football. And so that was just my thing growing up. I mean, that was the way I grew up. It was the way I connected with my dad and with my uncles and cousins. And so last month, Alabama played in the Orange Bowl. And so I asked my wife if she wanted to go, and she said no. And I said, well, would you go with me to this game? And she said, okay. So I thought, you know what? I mean, South Beach in January seems lovely as compared to the weather that we sometimes have in January, right? So we fly down to Miami for the game. My dad had warned us. He had said, hey, I've been to that game before. Sometimes leaving that game, I have found it can get crazy and it can be difficult to get back to your hotel, which can sometimes be 20, 30 minutes away from where the stadium is. And so like I've done most of my life, I didn't listen to his advice because I think I know best, right? And so my wife, though, heard his advice as well. And she said, hey, we really ought to pay attention to that. And so about the beginning of the fourth quarter, she looks at me and says, hey, do you think we ought to go ahead and go? And I said, absolutely not. We didn't fly down here to leave early. I mean, I wanted to stay till the very end of the game for the trophy ceremony, for the confetti to drop. I wanted to experience it all, but I had to make that decision that all of us have had to make from time to time. Should we stay or should I stay married, right? And so I decided... Like I have grown accustomed to doing, I decided, let's go, you know, I was going to listen to my wife, let's go ahead and go. So with 6 minutes remaining, we decided to go ahead and leave early to make sure we could get a car. And unfortunately, as we walked out into the Miami night air, I realized that we were not alone. There were thousands of other people who had the same idea that we had had. Now, a friend of mine works for the Miami Dolphins, and I'd already asked him, hey, what's the best way for us to get home to get a car? And he said, oh, you ought to try the taxi line. And I said, I'm sorry, the what? There's still a taxi line? He said, no, I know it's crazy, but we've pushed Uber and Lyft. We pushed those pretty far away from the stadium, so try the taxi line. So we find the taxi line. There were 150 people in the line and two taxis. And so I thought, okay, well, that's not going to work. So we just started walking. And I've got the ESPN app open because I'm trying to watch the end of the game. I've got the Uber app open and the Lyft app open because I was trying to make sure we got a car. And both of them were nuts. I mean, it was like initially saying 10, 11, 12 minutes just to get connected to a driver. I started getting nervous. And I started thinking, oh no, I don't know how we're going to get home. And then there's hundreds and hundreds of other people trying to do the same thing. There was confusion. I heard the police yelling at people. There were people getting into fights over the game. I mean, it was nuts, right? And so my wife's looking at me going, can I trust you? You know what I'm saying? Like, can I really believe that you're going to get us home? I'm like, hey, listen, babe, I've got this. That did not make her feel any more confident. So I said, hey, here's what we're going to do. I realized that about a quarter, maybe half a mile away, there was a Walmart. And I thought, well, surely we go to the Walmart, we call, we request a driver to come to Walmart. Surely they can't resist. Who can resist lowering back prices, right? And so we went to the Walmart and it worked. Almost immediately, we got connected to a driver. They called my phone. They said, hey, I'm here to pick you up. I said, great. At that point, I had Uber and Lyft open. I wasn't sure which one it was. I thought, it doesn't really matter. We get in the back of this person's car, and we're getting ready to go. Just as we're getting out of the Walmart parking lot, it started getting crazy. Now hundreds of people are in the parking lot, and I thought, this is great. We already got a car. But then I get the text from one of the services saying, hey, your driver's here now. And I thought, oh, I better cancel it so they don't charge me. When I canceled it on his phone in the front seat that I could see, it says, the driver has just canceled the ride. I canceled the wrong one. I got confused. I was nervous. I wasn't sure what was going on. And he says, hey, I'm so sorry. Did you just cancel the ride? I said, oh my goodness, I must have done the wrong one. I said, how can I make sure that I request you now to get you back? And he said, it doesn't work like that. You got to get out of the car. I said to him, it was the most confrontational I have ever felt in my life. I said, no. We're not getting out of the car. I said, just take us to our hotel and I promise you I will take care of you. My wife texts me and goes, take care of him? You don't even have cash. I said, that's beside the point. Please stop texting me. I'm literally, at this point, I'm sweating. And not because it was warm. I was so nervous. She texts me and says, why are you sweating? I said, seriously, stop. I'm trying to think, okay? She texts me back and says, don't you think you ought to make some conversation with him? And I'm like, okay, enough, you know? So I asked the guy, I said, hey, so how long are you working tonight? He said, I'm going to probably go in pretty early tonight. Normally, I'd stay a little later, but I'm going to go in early. I said, oh, yeah, why is that? He said, because tomorrow morning, I got to take my whole family to church. And I said, oh, Jesus, thank you. I said, we are on the same team. I couldn't wait to tell him. I said, listen, I'm actually a pastor. I work at a church. You and I, man, we are brothers from another mother. Like, we are on the same team. My wife literally texted me praise emojis, like a long string of them, you know? Fortunately, he immediately turned the radio on to Christian music. You know, he looked back at me and he goes, sir, you got in the right car tonight. I thought, wow, this is literally, like, I don't know, this guy's maybe an angel. I'm not sure, but this is awesome. We get to the hotel. I said, hey, how much would that have normally cost you? He tells me. I said, can you give me your Venmo account handle so that I can send you the money? Fortunately, he didn't think that was an odd thing. And he said, sure. And so I ended up paying him and all worked out. But when I heard that he was taking his family to church tomorrow, I literally thought, this changes everything. Now I feel like you and I are on the same team. There's something about what you believe that I also believe that we're wearing the same jersey. And that's how life works, right? When you learn about people, it actually helps you connect with them. We learn something about them by the way they identify themselves. You've had this experience, right? Where you meet somebody in business and they tell you where they're from and you say, oh my goodness, that's very near where I grew up. Or they tell you where they went to college. Or they tell you what they do for a living even, and you think, oh, I used to work there as well. It makes so much of a difference when people begin to identify themselves because we can connect with that. It literally is like wearing the team's jersey. And that really is what baptism is. We're going to talk just very briefly about this 2,000-year-old tradition of the church called baptism. Baptism is basically our way of saying, hey, I now am identifying myself as a Christian. I'm identifying myself as a follower of Jesus. I'm going public with it. It's letting people know what jersey you're wearing. Have you ever seen maybe one of your favorite athletes wearing a different jersey? And it's kind of confusing. You guys remember the end of Michael Jordan's career? You know, Michael Jordan won 3 world championships with the Bulls. Then he had that little stint playing for the Birmingham Barons in baseball. And then he had 3 more years where he won 3 more world championships. But his career didn't end there. He played for another team after this. Does anybody remember who it was? Washington. Yeah, the Wizards. When I see Michael Jordan now wearing a Washington Wizards jersey, when I see the old footage or old pictures of him wearing a Wizards jersey, it throws me off because I'm so used to seeing him wearing the Bulls jersey. And the jersey we wear tells other people about us. It identifies us, and it also allows us to connect with other people who are wearing the same jersey. We just finished this little series that we did to kick this year off called Better. But because we want all of us to have a better year this year than we had last year. And there's a little phrase that we say. We say it often here. It's become kind of a, for us, a little bit of a value proposition for people who are choosing to follow Jesus. We say it this way. We say that following Jesus will make your life better. Baptism is an opportunity for people to say, yeah, I decided that I am going to follow Jesus with my life, and it is making my life better. It doesn't mean life is going splendidly well. It doesn't mean all of a sudden I got a raise at work, I got this really hot date Friday night, and now I'm making way more money than I ever thought before. No, no, no. It doesn't mean our circumstances get better. But it means that following him gives us someone to walk with and someone to walk with us in the middle of all kinds of good and all kinds of bad. We not only say following Jesus will make your life better, but we also say that following Jesus will also make you better at life. You're going to hear stories from people today who are going to give voice to the same thing. They're going to say that when I was on my own, when it was just me, before I met Jesus, this was what was happening in my life. But now that I'm following him, this is now what life has become. And they're going to say, it's better. It's just better. And baptism is our opportunity. It's the vehicle that God has given us to give voice to what people say about following Jesus. We didn't invent this idea, though. We didn't come up with it. No, this is something that we hold as a tradition that the church has done for a couple of thousand years. In fact, when Jesus was on earth, when he was beginning his ministry, that's where we first see the idea of baptism popping up. But it wasn't even Jesus who brought us this idea. Do you remember who gives us the visual of baptism? Yeah, his name was John the Baptist. That was actually his nickname. He did it so much, that's what he became known as. He was known as John the Baptizer. When I was a kid, I used to think Baptist was just his last name. Like he was John Baptist, you know, or John Baptiste if he was, you know, trying to put some sort of accent on it. But John the Baptist started baptizing people. But it was unique because he wasn't just baptizing anyone. He was baptizing Jewish men and women who were now saying, hey, I have decided that I'm going to put my faith in the coming Messiah. I'm actually going to put my faith in the one who is to come, and in some of their cases, put their faith in the one who is already here, Jesus himself. And it was a spectacle for the whole town. It was a spectacle for the whole region. Mark, in his account of Jesus's life, he begins his account by saying, this is the good news of Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. And then he immediately tells us about John the Baptist. And then he tells us how many people were coming to watch their friends, their family, get baptized down by the river. This is Mark chapter 1, verse 5. Mark writes, the whole Judean countryside and all the people of Jerusalem went out to see him. It was as if he were doing this right in the middle of the town square. Whatever town you're from, whatever city you live in, you could just imagine right there in the middle of the city at noon on a Wednesday or Friday night at 7 when everybody's out and everybody's there. That was what this was like. Now, he doesn't literally mean all the people. No, for emphasis. He's using hyperbole. He's saying it felt like everyone was there. It's like some party that you went to. And somebody said, how was the party? And you're like, oh my goodness, the party was amazing. Everybody was at the party. And you immediately feel insecure because you're like, well, I wasn't there. You know, so evidently I'm not everybody, right? But in Mark's case, he's trying to explain it to say, hey, this was a huge deal. I mean, there were tons of people that went out to see what was happening, to see who John was baptizing. Here's what they were doing. Mark 1:5 continues, confessing their sins, they were baptized by him in the Jordan River. They were confessing their sins. They were admitting to other people around them that they had been going one way and there was a huge turn in their life. They were literally repenting or going a different direction now. They were confessing that, and then John was baptizing them because of their newfound faith. And then the amazing thing that happened just after this is Jesus himself shows up. And Jesus himself models for us what it looks like to go through this traditional sacred symbol of baptism. If you want a definition or you want a very simple and clear explanation of what baptism is, I want to give you just one that you can hold on to just explain what maybe you've experienced before, if you've been at North Point before, or maybe what you've experienced if you've even experienced something, baptism at another church. Here's what baptism really is. This is how we understand baptism. Baptism is a public declaration. It's a public declaration of what you now believe, of who you now are, of the jersey you're now wearing. It's similar if you have been to a wedding recently, or maybe you were in a wedding recently, where they had an exchange of rings, right? If somebody were to ask you, well, does the ring make you married? No, in the same way baptism doesn't make you a follower of Jesus. No, that is expressed through faith. But the ring is a symbol of the vows that you have given to the other person. The ring is a symbol of who you now see yourself as. I am the husband of Jenny. That's why I wear this ring. Because I admit, before her, I was going the wrong way. And then I met her and turned my way, and she provided me salvation in the dating or marital sense, not in the spiritual sense. But that's what baptism is. It's a public declaration of how you now identify, what you now believe, and who you now see yourself to be. It's a public declaration expressing a private decision, a decision that you made maybe personally, maybe privately. Maybe you made a decision while you were listening to a message or reading the Bible on your own in the privacy of your own car or your own office or your own home. Or maybe sitting in a seat or watching one of the streams from our services, you decided, you know what? I am making a private decision, a personal decision that is going to change everything. You know how our personal decisions work. Our personal decisions are not just personal. No, they actually affect everyone around us. And so if it feels rather overt or rather public to make such a private personal decision so out there, so outward, the reason why we do that is because the decisions we make affect other people. And so baptism is a way to give voice to a private decision that men or women have made in their own life in a very public way. The decision that we're celebrating, baptism, is a public declaration expressing a private decision of faith in Jesus. That they have put their faith in Jesus. That they decided, hey, I realized that I was lost, and then I met him, and now I have found that I am found. I realized that I was once dead, but God, in his great mercy, made me alive in Jesus. I was once lost, now I'm found. I was once dead, and now I'm alive. That is what baptism is. And Jesus, at the very end of his time on earth, he gave us a commission. He gave us a very clear and strong commission to go do the same thing with other people. So the reason why we follow in this tradition is because Jesus has asked us to do this. At the very end of Matthew's account of Jesus's life, he says that Jesus looked at all of his followers, the hundreds of them that were gathered around him, and he said this in Matthew 28, 19, "Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them," baptizo, the verb dip them, actually baptize them, symbolizing the old has gone and the new has come, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded you. And then he makes a promise that literally changes everything. He says, "And surely I am with you always, to the very end of the age." Some of the stories you're going to get to hear today are stories of people who would say, I was in the middle of a season of depression, or I just felt lost. I felt purposeless. But because of his great love, because I realized that he's with me to the very end of the age, his presence has made all the difference in my life, and this changes everything.